KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live on Lincoln Way and 3rd Avenue in the Inner Sunset.
The Richmond District.
It's technically the Castro.
Twin Peaks.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I'm from Georgia.
Coming up, Nutria. Big swamp rodents creating an even bigger problem on the bayou.
They eat like 10 pounds of vegetation every day, and they breed and breed and breed.
But Nutria aren't just in the South. They're in California, too, and they're threatening the Delta. We follow a team tracking them down.
There we go. Those are adult Nutria, and that one just stole our sweet potato.
Then we'll head to San Quentin State Prison and hear from two unlikely cellmates.
So living with Baby Bear, this is my first time living with anyone that wasn't Black and wasn't a gangbanger in this facility.
That and more today on Cross Currents.
Wesley, what about the ROUSs?
Rodents of unusual size? I don't think they exist.
Ooh, rodents of unusual size. That's a scene you may remember from the film The Princess Bride. Well, those particular rats may not exist outside of the fairy tale, but their likeness to a real rodent has inspired biologists in Louisiana and a group of Bay Area filmmakers. Chris Meltzer, Jeff Springer, and Quinn Costello spent 4 years making a movie about Nutria and their devastating effect on the southern Louisiana landscape. KALW's Angela Johnston interviewed Quinn about his movie, Rodents of Unusual Size.
Nutria are these 20-pound rodents that are native to Argentina. They're kind of like a rat in that they have a long tail, but they're huge, much bigger than a rat. They're also kind of like a platypus because they have these webbed feet that they use to swim around. They spend a lot of their time in water. And then, unlike a lot of rodents, they have these gigantic orange, bright orange teeth that comes about from all the iron and all the plants that they eat. Whether or not you think that they're horrifically ugly or really, really cute and endearing kind of depends on the context you see them in. The context most people see them in is, you know, swimming around in a swamp or like crawling up through the pipes in your toilet in the middle of the night. And so they can be really, really terrifying animals. But in the case of people that raise them as pets or, turn them into costumes for Mardi Gras parades, you kind of start to see them as being a little more more cute, a little more beaver-like.
How did they arrive in Louisiana?
So in the 30s, fur was really popular, and it was mostly mink and muskrat. But it was something that was only available to the super rich. And it was just the height of glamour was to be able to afford to buy your wife a fur coat. So there was a group of people that were looking for a cheap alternative to mink and muskrat. And they found out about this South American rodent, Nutria. It was a little more rat-like. It was a little less attractive, maybe. But the fur is very lustrous and beautiful. And so they decided to bring the Nutria to Louisiana and start raising them on fur farms. But at some point, the Nutria escaped into the wild. And where they really, really flourished was just in the swamps and in the wilds of southern Louisiana. Because unlike Argentina, they're not killed off by regular freezes. There are no like giant cats that eat them. Mm-hmm. The only predator besides man are alligators, and an alligator will eat a Nutria and then you just take a nap for like a month because they're so huge. So the alligators aren't really a good means of controlling them. And so they just multiplied and multiplied and multiplied until they became a huge problem because they eat like 10 pounds of vegetation every day. They eat like half their body weight every day, and they breed and breed and breed. And so what they're eating are these plants, which are integral to keeping the wetlands there and alive. And the wetlands protect against storm surge. So every time a hurricane bears down on that area, if there's a bunch of Nutria damage, the hurricane is going to be far, far worse. So getting the Nutria numbers under control was critical to trying to rehabilitate the coast.
This was a jungle. When I grew up, it was a jungle. It was nothing but big oak trees. When I look out now, it looks like a disaster. These animals came out in 1958 like an invasion. All that grass that the muskrats used to eat, they cleaned it like a baseball field. Now it's all water.
Yeah, so where are they in the state? Can you describe, you know, what part of Louisiana they're in and what the landscape is like there?
Southern Louisiana provides basically all the shrimp and crab. It's the city of New Orleans. It's culturally one of the most unique and wonderful places in the world. It's home to, you know, the Cajuns and the Creole people and generations of people who have really lived there and stayed there for forever. And it's a really, really important place environmentally because it protects against storm surge. So the barrier islands that exist out there are basically the things that help break down this storm surge. And so coastal Louisiana is losing a football field of land every hour, slipping into the ocean. So it's really, really important to get the nutria under control to help start to mitigate that damage and slow it down a little bit.
What's been the state's solution so far?
So the state came up with this bounty program that pays people $5 a tail to hunt the nutria. And that, over the course of doing it now, I think it's been about 14 years or so, they've gotten the numbers down from 30 million at their height down to several million.
You're out there to help the land, but I mean, every nutria you put down, that's $5 in your pocket. And that's the way I look at it.
For most of the film, you follow this fisherman, Thomas Gonzalez, who's now hunting nutria along with crab and crawfish. And he lost his home in Hurricane Katrina.
We got something in common, me and the nutria. He's a survivor like me. You know, he wants to survive. But like everything, one day or another, it's got to go. Here's my buddy. We got it in common. Mother Nature tried to get rid of us, but couldn't do it. We still here. We ain't leaving. They said they ain't leaving, and I ain't leaving. So we're gonna live here till we go.
He's a really great character. How did you find him?
I had a list of nutria hunters that I was going down, and I was calling and talking to a lot of these people, and one guy said, you know, I'm really good at hunting nutria, but if you want to talk to the king of the nutria hunters, you got to call this guy Thomas Gonzalez. And I don't know that where he lives, Delacroix Island, is going to be there in 15 years. We saw it change quite a bit just in the 4 years we spent making the film.
That's filmmaker Quinn Costello speaking with KELW's Angela Johnston. The movie Rodents of Unusual Size is playing tomorrow night in San Rafael. There's a Q&A with the directors after the show. Find all the information at KELW.org.
Rats, rats, everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, there's rats. Rats, rats, eating all your books, looking at your photos. Closets hiding underneath your socks, living in your living rooms, sleeping by your bedroom clock.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. As we just heard, 20-pound swamp rodents are destroying levees and waterways in Louisiana. But earlier this spring, nutria were detected in California, in the Central Valley. Over the past few months, they've been multiplying and making their way to the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. And the Delta, with its thousands of miles of waterways and levees, is essential to California's water supply. And nutria could put all that at risk. We'll return now to KELW's Angela Johnston to hear how the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has formed a team to stop the nutria in their tracks.
I don't think they know we're here yet. So as we come up on the rim of the pond here, just keep scanning that opposite side. Do you see where there's dark spots in the tule, little dark pockets? Those are their beds. Yeah, you see him scratching himself right there.
Sean McCain didn't even know what a nutria was before he applied for a job as the state's only nutria biologist.
Yeah. We're going to keep watching to see if what the nutria do. Oh, yeah. I think there's one swimming around.
He's fresh out of grad school and learned about them when he was listening to a podcast about conservation a few months ago. Now, he spends his days in the Central Valley, sneaking quietly around marshland, looking for nutria.
There. You see that?
Oh, in the...
Yep. Yeah, he's scratching himself. There he is. Oh, there he goes.
Sean first saw a family of nutria here 2 weeks ago. Since then, he's been coming back to this spot near Snelling off the Merced River almost every day to spy on these guys. He's noticed something else, too.
I've been watching the vegetation actually recede away from the middle of the pond.
Nutria can eat up to 25% of their body weight in one day. They munch on the roots of green duckweeds, cattails, and tule reeds. If they clear-cut an entire marsh like this one, they put all the birds and frogs and other species that depend on it at risk.
So the nutria are eating, like, this is pond has changed rapidly because
of that. Just in the last few weeks, yeah. They've been feeding in this pond pretty significantly. On camera, we've got at least one family unit, potentially multiple family units.
Because they like to burrow, nutria can erode the land around these swamps. They can even destroy levees. The nutria problem is potentially so big that Fish and Wildlife is pulling staff from all over the state to train in nutria eradication. That's why today, Sean's joined by two fisheries biologists from the Sacramento area.
Yeah, watch your step. Takes a while to get your marsh legs.
At another pond, Sean and the team haven't seen any nutria in the flesh, so they're setting up a wildlife camera to see if they can capture them on tape and creating a feeding platform within the camera's range.
If there is a nutria in that area, we want it on that camera because we don't want to be missing anything.
I join the team as they wade into chest-deep water and yank reeds out of the marsh and put bait on a wooden platform. That bait? Sweet potatoes. One guy cuts bright orange slices to lure the nutria. Merced County is the sweet potato capital of California. Farmers have donated barrels because they're worried about nutria's looming threat to the entire ag industry.
And we try to make it visually appealing that will hopefully attract attract nutria to the platform so we can get them on camera.
Looks beautiful.
Doesn't that look nice? Don't you want to sit up there and just start gnawing on some potatoes?
Sean does this kind of work all day long, trying to get eyes on nutria, assessing habitat, checking cameras. When we get back to the car, he plugs in an SD card from one of the wildlife cameras into his laptop, and we watch.
I have to get a little shade or something. Oh, there we go.
Oh, wow.
Those are adult nutria, and that one just stole our sweet potato.
Oh, there's so many of them.
Yep. So it looks like two adults to me, and that looked like it could have been the pups moving up. There are the pups. So it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and there's a sixth one moving up into the view. Yep.
They're there.
Now that the team's confirmed a big family of nutria in this swamp, they'll send in trappers who will set traps all over the area to start to eradicate this population one by one. It's part of a larger eradication plan taking place at the Nutria Incident Command Center at an old hunting check station near Los Banos.
So this is a runway trap.
Greg Gerstenberg holds down the fort here. He's the incident command chief for the Nutria Task Force. He's showing me the different traps they have in this huge metal shed out back.
An animal comes in and it walks through and it shuts.
On the walls of the command center, huge maps of the Central Valley and Delta are covered with pink and yellow and blue dots, showing where nutria have been spotted and where Fish and Wildlife suspect they'll be. These maps help people like Sean determine where to set cameras and traps, and it tells them when they should pull their scarce resources from one area and move to another, like the vulnerable Delta.
So our goal is to keep them out of the Delta, to protect the levees, the wetlands of the Delta, and try to get them when they're still in this marginal habitat.
If the nutria start breeding there in large numbers, they could erode levees and compromise the state's water infrastructure and farmland. If Fish and Wildlife can't stop them in time,
ag farmers would probably start to see their effect along the edges of wherever there's water. Canal systems would have burrows into the canals and the potential to affect their integrity of the canals.
Greg hadn't even heard of nutria a year ago. When a trapper unintentionally caught one while he was looking for beaver, he called up Greg
and said, "Hey, I think I trapped a nutria." And I was thinking at the time, what's a nutria?
So he Googled it and had the guy bring it in, and they did an autopsy.
And it was a pregnant female. So we knew that this wasn't the only one. There had to be at least one more out there.
Turns out, nutria can have up to 200 babies a year. So Greg had to get on it fast. 7 months in, they're still learning on the job and training dozens of other state employees every month who come to this command center to learn the basics, like how to identify one.
This is our freezer of where we store animals. That was something found on the road, so.
In the deep freeze out back, Greg rummages around for frozen nutria.
And here we have a nutria.
He pulls out nutria heads with giant orange buck teeth and bottles of their urine, helpful for trapping. They're keeping these for training, and so they can give some to other departments to taxidermy and display in their offices. Say, if a farmer wanted to come and see what one looked like.
Let me pull another one out. So if you can kind of, and you're mentally picture it, but you can see the tail is a round tail. Partially little tiny short stubby fur, looks more like a rat tail. The feet, if you can see on this one here, it has webbing between most of the toes, but no webbing between the outer toe.
They're also looking to how other states have dealt with the problem. Louisiana's offering a bounty to hunters to counter their out-of-control nutria problem. Greg's modeling California's efforts off of Chesapeake Bay's,
where they had nutria, and they have successfully eradicated them.
Greg hopes by the time he retires in 5 years, there won't be any nutria in California. And while he thinks there are thousands out there right now, and a new breeding population was just found in the Delta, he tells me they've only caught 299. As I begin to pack up my things, a Fish and Wildlife trapper walks into the command center.
Anything? You got one.
Finally.
300. That's 300.
Yeah. I reported it.
You're number
from the 300. Phone.
You get
right.
A t-shirt or something.
All right.
Number 300. An ominous milestone. But next month, once they start surveying the Delta, Greg thinks that number could double. In Los Banos, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Angela is KELW's environment reporter. You can reach her at environment@kelw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Our next story comes to us from inside San Quentin State Prison.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden you heard this.
Close to 4,000 inmates are incarcerated at San Quentin. They live in cells that are 48 square feet and a little less than 8 feet tall, most of them with a cellmate. Reporter Ton Tran brings us the story of a pair of cellmates who made the choice to live together despite a mountain of obstacles.
Hi, my name is Jarvis Yvonne Clark, but everybody calls me Lady J.
Hi, my name is Jacob Edward Gable. People just call me Jake.
What is my nickname for you?
Lady Mama J.
No, my nickname for you. What nickname did I give you?
Oh, she nicknamed Baby Bear.
Yeah, this is my Baby Bear.
I saw Lady J standing by the barber area, and she was kind of just staring at me. So at first I felt kind of awkward. And then she decides to walk up and introduce herself. So it wasn't as awkward as before. It was still awkward for me because I'm not used to
transgenders.
Well, no.
Inmate people.
I'm not used to just people in general. So she came in and introduced herself and told me what she does for the inmates in the prison. And if I'm not comfortable with anything or if I have any problems with anything or anybody, to come to her and she'll take care of it or try to take care of it and do it she can.
Have I been true to my word on that one?
Yes, she has. She has taken care of many problems that I've had.
Ooh, and there's been a multitude. Lord have mercy. Can you imagine a white boy, blonde, Aryan-looking white boy, coming into the system and he's living with a transgender? We'll get to that story later.
So you went and talked to these people. I didn't really have any issues until a couple days after, and mm-hmm. they were still trying to talk me into ignoring you and just walking right, like if you're at yard, walk right past you at yard, don't even acknowledge you mm-hmm. in the cafeteria or in the chow hall. Same thing, don't acknowledge you, don't talk to you, don't look at you. And
just pretend that I was dead to the world. I didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And I decided to move in with you because even after you went and talked to people, I was still having issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell you about half of them because...
Why? You think I'm a tiger? And I would go... I would never attack. I just went and informed them that here at San Quentin, this is a prison where we have non-designated people, and you will not act like that. So let me ask you a question. What made you say, I'm not going to follow that rule and just say, I'm going to hang out and talk to Lady J?
Because you were one of the only people that I felt comfortable with being around in the building.
That almost makes me want to cry.
Please don't.
I'm not.
And I didn't talk to anybody else except for maybe my cellie at the time that I had before I moved in with you. But you're the only person that I felt comfortable with. And I don't like being told what to do.
I love that. So living with Baby Bear, this is really my first time living with anyone that wasn't black and wasn't a gangbanger in this facility or in prison itself, or living with someone who is not a long-term inmate, right? I'm old enough to be his older big sister. We're gonna leave it at that. Hush. But I'm very comfortable with him. He's like, I can come in and after having a bad day of dealing with these morons here, and I'm talking about the people in blue, and he sits there and he listens to me just gripe and, for lack of better words, bitch. I might bitch for about 2 hours, but he's listening, right?
And I'm half listening.
Half listening, but he's listening, right? And I appreciate that so much because it's like this calming force in my life right now, and that's what I need. How's it living with me?
Almost like being at home, because at home,
Oh, that's a beautiful answer.
At home, I live with four other women in my household, and I'm more comfortable around women than I am with men.
Okay.
So,
you know, that just validated my womanliness. Thank you, Baby Bear. So I appreciate you, kid.
I know.
Aww.
Hey,
story featured the voices of Lady J and Jacob Gable and was reported by Ton Tran of San Quentin Radio. Our radio training program at San Quentin is supported by the California Arts Council with funding from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. Today's team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Maggie McKay, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Gwynn, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Shireen Adil is our content manager. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by San Francisco-born Erica Stuckey. You can join her for a night of yodeling, spoken word, and avant-garde jazz tomorrow at The Laundry in San Francisco. Show starts at 6 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.